if LinkedIn is making you want to die, like, you don't have to do it. I think that the people who are out there saying, you know, LinkedIn changed my life, you need to be on LinkedIn, blah, blah, blah. Like, yes, there's truth to that, but it doesn't leave room for the nuance, which is that if your business is doing well, you don't need it.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise the glass.
Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. I am thrilled to be joined by Erica Schneider today, founder of Cut the Fluff. We first crossed paths in person, I think in New York City at an event. That said, I was a follower of your content prior to that and a big fan. So this is a fanboy moment of getting to host you on our podcast. So thank you for joining us. Before I ramble on too much, Erica, why don't I let you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about your background and what you're up to at Cut the Fluff.
That was my first networking event ever, by the way. And I know that sounds crazy, but I wasn't a marketer until 2018. And then I was traveling and then COVID happened. So I didn't go to events. So you are the first person that I've ever made a quote unquote like friendship with or like a working deal with from a networking event. So that's always going to hold a special place in my heart. Yeah. So I was the head of content at Grizzle, a B2B content marketing agency based in London. I did that for 4.5 years. And last October, I left my job and started my own business, which I've called Cut the Fluff. It's also the name of my newsletter. I kind of did it backwards. So a lot of people, when they quit their job, they have a service offer in mind or some sort of like a high ticket way to make money. And I was like, I don't have that. I'm just going to sell a bunch of courses. And I was able to sell courses on hooks, content editing, and there's one other on how to make your long form writing into shorter social post ideas. I was able to do it well because I collaborated with people that had big audiences. And I also had a big audience that I had been growing while I was at Grizzle. So I had the volume thing in my favor. And so I was able to make good enough money from my courses to feel comfortable leaving my job. But it wasn't until 6 or 7 months into that journey that I finally figured out an actual one-to-one offer, which is called Content Sparring. And that's what I'm spending most of my time doing now. So it's basically live editing. We can talk more about it. But yeah, that's my quick intro.
We will talk more about that. I'm so curious, though. What were you said you weren't a marketer until 2018. What were you prior to 2018?
Many things.
Fair. All right. That's a separate podcast episode.
I'll just give you the TLDR. I left college and thought I wanted to work on movies. So I was a production assistant. Then I was unsure what I wanted to do. I had moved states. And so I was a delivery driver for a fast food restaurant. And then when they realized I had a college degree, they made me their head of catering. Don't know why. I didn't have any experience with that. I did that for 4 years. That was insane. Then I was a technical project manager at an app startup called Level Up. They were acquired by Grubhub, the food delivery thing we all know and love. Then I had a quarter life crisis at 27 and lived on a farm for 3 years and thought maybe I'll be a farmer. Then I was like, I don't want to actually be a farmer. So I went to Thailand and I taught English for 2 years. And then I was like, maybe I'll be a teacher. And then someone was like, have you ever heard of Upwork? And I was like, what's that? And I started freelance editing and writing. The context that I left out was that I always wanted to be a writer, which is why I thought I wanted to work in movies. That was like my first thing. But I didn't realize that you could make money from writing by being a marketer. So I started as a freelance writer and worked my way to where I am now.
That's fascinating. You need your own podcast to like tell that career story.
Yeah, no, I have told that story on my friend Nick Bennett's podcast called 1,000 Roots, I believe it's called. It's a fascinating story. It's very unconventional.
We do hear from a ton of marketers, some of the best marketers we know. They have like a journalism background, or I think your like writing background's really interesting. Like, I think a lot of really great marketers aren't classically trained in marketing or whatever you want to call it. So that's fascinating.
I think it's for the best.
What is the Content Cocktail Hour? We do always ask our guests. We like to kick it off. What are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
So I have one next to me. Seltzer water is my favorite drink in the world. If you're listening from Europe, then this is your classic soda water. There's an important distinction, though, between sparkling water, which is not this. Sparkling water is not have enough bubbles. And then there's like club soda, not enough bubbles. There's the Perrier's of the world, not enough bubbles. Okay, I'm going for high carbonation in this can. I want it to hurt. There's a phrase from a famous seltzer company that I'm obsessed with called like, when you take a sip, it needs to hurt so good. And that is the phrase that I live by. So I'm obsessed with seltzer water. I drink it multiple times a day.
I didn't know there was a bubble ratio in all these different types of water.
There are YouTube channels devoted to this that I do watch.
Fascinating. That's another whole rabbit hole we could go down. But the people are here for the marketing advice. So let's jump into that. I'm fascinated by the courses that you offer. I think a lot of times we think of like content courses. They're so focused on like creating better content or creating good content. But your lens is a little bit different. Like you've got the atomization of long to short, writing just really strong and powerful like hooks, just kind of a piece of the writing. But the one that maybe we'll start on is like editing. I think so many people like forget that editing is such a critical part of creating good content. I think if you're a writer, you're like, sure, I've got an editor and this piece or this article I'm writing needs to be edited. But I think we as marketers sometimes are guilty of like, oh, we just write content and like we leave out this very critical step of editing. Was that an experience you had had where you're like, man, marketers really need help with editing? Or what was kind of the impetus to focusing on that editing piece?
So I actually wanted to be a freelance editor before I wanted to be a freelance writer. I think it's because when I was teaching English in Thailand, I had to kind of relearn the English language and I was grading homework. And I don't mean like high school homework. I literally mean from 10-year-olds. So it wasn't advanced grammar, but it was grammar. And there was something interesting about taking a slate of writing and like rearranging the puzzle pieces to make it sound more natural, the way that it should, quote unquote, be in the English language. And that clicked with my brain. I enjoyed the process of doing that. And so I thought, okay, maybe I can go, now that I have spent years relearning English grammar, I might as well put this to use. So my first job on Upwork was actually editing a magazine for some like local county in California. And then I got into writing as well, but I always had editing in the back of my mind as something that I was more interested in. So it wasn't necessarily feeling like marketers didn't edit enough. It was just following my passion at first. Once I got into it, though, I realized that writing a first draft, or as a freelance writer, writing a draft and not giving yourself the ability to like self-edit it so that you feel really great about what you're sending is problematic. Because then when you send it to the agency, for example, that I work with, there's so much more to still be done. So I think I had a really, really close view to what happens to writing when you don't spend enough time actually giving it the edits that it deserves. So I always felt that was important. And then when I became the managing editor and then the head of content, it was also just like a passion thing. So my first goal was I want to help writers understand how to self-edit so that they can feel more confident about what they're sending and so that they can spend less time when it gets kicked back to them, because that's such a huge like friction gap in the endless feedback loops, essentially, in the process. And then, I don't know, I just talked about it a lot and people were telling me that they never thought about editing that way. And so I just started, I guess, becoming an editing thought leader, if you will. And now people tell me that they actually feel passionate about editing, which is something they never thought they'd say before. And that's cool. But yeah, my phrase that I always go to is that editing is not just a cutting exercise, it's a value-adding exercise. So you can have words on the page and they're actually great, but it's missing something, and that is also editing. So it's basically just thinking harder about what you're writing so that what you're actually shipping is as good as it can be in that moment.
I think that's so cool. I had a mentor. He was actually the CMO at the last business I was at prior to the Juice. He came from an agency background as well. And he would always tell us he was a better editor than he was a writer. He always said the same thing, like, I'm not editing to cut. Like, yeah, we're probably going to end up cutting things, but I'm editing so that the value can stand out more, so that it can like be more clear what you are providing. And that really like changed my lens on like editing isn't just getting out a red pen and like crossing things out, right? It's much more nuanced and much more like valuable than that. So I think your perspective is really, really neat.
Yeah, totally. Writing is thinking, editing is rethinking.
So you mentioned you were building an audience while at Grizz previously. I'm curious that you maybe were doing it before. It was cool to do it a little bit, because now that's even brands are trying to empower their own kind of creators under their own roof to build an audience, or they're helping their team build an audience. How did that happen? What was that, accidental? Was that very intentional? Or how did you go about building an audience while working for a brand?
This is a really cool story as well. So Tom Watley, who's the founder of Grizzle, is a very, very cool guy. And he saw in 2021 the power of a personal brand. And so he sent a Slack message. There were only a few of us in the company at that time. And he said, hey, you know, come to this call that it's going to happen next week. I'm just going to like walk you all through a little slide deck that I made about the power of personal branding. And if you guys want to do it, that will be great. If you don't want to, no pressure. So it was almost like an educational challenge. You know, this could be interesting if you want to do it. And so I took the challenge and I was the only one who stayed with it. So we all kind of went on LinkedIn and Twitter and posted, and the other people were like, I hate this. I'm not doing this. This is horrible. And I didn't love it at first, but I wanted to keep with it because I was seeing all of these people that were saying really interesting things before it was so, so filled with like the cliche stuff that we see today. It's getting a bit crowded, which is fine. That's kind of what happens, but it was a little bit earlier and everything was so cool. You know, I found Devin Reed, John Bonini, Aaron Balsa, like all these people, they were there and they were giving advice. And I just thought they were cool, basically. I thought they were really cool. And I wanted to be like them. Oh, Amanda Nativi Dodd, she was everywhere. So it started as a challenge. And then it became my creative outlet. So I never planned on leaving this job because I built a personal brand. But that is, I guess, what happened, which is, I know a lot of businesses are kind of scared of that happening. But Tom, again, had a really open mind that anyone who comes through my doors, I want them to leave better and I want them to have a better experience away from here if they choose to. And so he had that mindset. We both kind of knew it might happen. And then when it did, it did. And yeah, that was that. But I absolutely love, I have more fun online than any other place I've had writing.
Wow. That's really cool. Both that kind of like encouragement to leave a little bit, and as well as like, I feel like so many people now, I was just doing it earlier today, ranting about the internet and how like dark and like negative it can be, but the fact that you've been able to kind of curate this arena of fun for you, that's really inspiring. You kind of preempted my next question though, and you mentioned it there a little bit, but how did you know when the time was right to make the leap to go do your own thing?
Yeah, two things happened. The first thing is I had a really successful course launch. So the first course I ever did was Hooks, and I told this story a bit on another podcast recently, but I started it as a very simple ebook, and then it evolved into a Notion document, and then it evolved into this kind of AI-powered course. So this is the third iteration that I had launched at this course over maybe 6 months. And this time I had collaborated with someone who also had a very big audience, and we pushed it hard. And we ended up doing like $60,000 in a week, which was quite insane. And it made me realize that there's something here. There's something to this. I have knowledge that people find valuable. And this is the most fun that I've ever had doing work, right? So at that moment, I kind of proved to myself, I can do this. And if I have more time to do this, I could create more courses or figure something out or whatever. So that was part one. Part two was I had kids. And I went away for my maternity leave and came back and was just honestly a bit of a different person. And I wanted more control over my time. I didn't want to have to tell someone, hey, you know, I'm not going to be working this morning because I only slept an hour last night, so I'll probably be working later. I was sending a lot of messages like that. It's not that Tom and everyone there wasn't supportive, because they were, but I felt guilty. Like, I felt like I wasn't doing my best work. And I didn't like that feeling. And I wanted to only answer to myself. So that was a really huge kind of moment for me where I was like, you know, I've made this money. I've proven to myself I can do it. I might as well go try, given the fact that I'm feeling this type of guilt and friction at the office.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I'm going to start this next question. I'm not exactly sure where it's going to end. So stick with me here. But courses, you mentioned like you're doing your own courses. I think there are creators, influencers out there doing courses. But I feel like it's also become very trendy for, maybe trendy is not the right word, but for companies to offer up courses. There's businesses that help you do that and even monetize courses. We did a report last year that was the state of gated versus ungated content that was really popular. And that was one of the like heuristics for people saying, you should only gate your content if it's something people are willing to pay for, which I thought was interesting. But like, what is the like threshold for you if companies or individuals are thinking about making courses and you do want to charge for it? I feel like that's a higher pressure of like the threshold or the bar to cross for the quality of content. There's some pressure for that if you're going to ask people to pay for it. Like, how do you know when something maybe changes from this is a really good ebook to, hey, this is something that like people are willing to pay for and could actually be expanded into a course?
Yeah. So you're right, by the way, I agree with everything you said that it's getting kind of trendy and everyone has a course. When I came into the course game, I already felt like that. And this was in 2022 and now it's 2024. So if anything, again, the space is getting more and more crowded. I think that to make a course valuable, I'm going to start there and then I'll go back. To make a course valuable, you need to give people a quick win. So they need to feel like they've learned something immediately that they can put into action. And then throughout every other step of the course, you need to give people action items or takeaways. So I think the difference between a course and a really long, potentially gated ebook or ungated ebook is that generally an ebook is more thoughts with a few takeaways, and a course is fewer thoughts, many, many, many action items and takeaways. So all of my courses are kind of a learn it, do it style. So people are paying for a course because they want guided accountability. They want guided assistance. And a lot of the longer ebooks out there, or research reports or analyses, are kind of just that. Like, they give you a starting point, but they don't tell you what to do with the information. And a course tells you specifically, step one, do this. Step two, do that. Here are like 10 frameworks to think about it. And then here are 10 examples underneath these frameworks. And here's how you can take this part and mix it with that part and get this result. Now go do it yourself. It's literally like you're going to class versus reading a book.
How helpful was you being a teacher for 2 years in your like course development?
Probably very helpful. And it's interesting too, because it wasn't just being a teacher. It was being a teacher of a foreign language. So I had to take I chose to take a teaching English as a foreign language course so I could be certified and feel like more confident. I don't like to do things unless I feel kind of confident in them. So when I was teaching, when I was going through that course, the most important lesson was do not say anything that doesn't need to be said. Keep it as simple as possible. So if you are teaching people how to speak English, especially kids, don't explain something with 20 words when you can use 3. And I think that also helped me in writing as well, because especially online writing, when you just need to be concise and snappy. But yes, I think that the way that I structured my classes, which I learned to do through this course, was, you know, you introduce the concept and then you do an exercise and then you kind of review what you did so that it helps with improving recall. I didn't think like, let me go back to how I was teaching, but I absolutely like subconsciously put that into my courses, I think.
All right, let's talk content sparring. You've written a lot about the discovery of finding this kind of product offering. So maybe tell us a little bit about that story and then tell us what the content sparring actually is.
God, I was like a fish out of water trying to figure out how to like do any type of high ticket offer. I am not a certified coach. I didn't want to be a coach. I didn't know if I wanted to work with teams or individuals. My specialty is editing and writing, but I don't like writing for people. I can do strategy, but I don't feel as confident in strategy as I am just in the words. So I remember I was talking to my friend Nick Bennett, who is a coach for solopreneurs. There's two Nick Bennetts, by the way, for anyone watching. So good luck finding the right one.
We're going to need middle initial here.
To put a middle initial on LinkedIn, can't ever find them. So I would, you know, this is what he does. And so I was just kind of rambling to him because I met him in a Slack solopreneur community. And I told him, I want to be in words all day. How do I do that? How am I in words all day without writing words for people? Essentially, I wanted to be an editor for people, but I didn't want to call myself that because nobody understands what that means. So I was fumbling about and do you know Neil, what's his name? Neil from Demand Curve and Caitlin Burgoyne?
Yep.
They have a cohort that they run called Unignorable. And somebody in their cohort asked Neil, hey, do you have anyone that you can think of that's really great at writing? Because I would like to spar with them on my content. So he used the word spar. And Neil messaged me because they just thought of me. And I said, yeah, let me meet with him. And we met, and it was the most fun that I've ever had in a one-to-one session. He came with content. I read it out loud. He asked me what I thought of it. I told him, and then we went like line by line. Okay, what do you mean here? What's that mean? Like, why'd you write this? What's the takeaway? And we're both on the keyboard live editing it together. And when the session ended, I was like, holy shit, that's it. That's what I want to do for the rest of my life. I don't know. I mean, who knows? But like for a while. I thought, what if I put the word content in front of it and I just offer content sparring, which is essentially your personal live editing person, but nobody gets that. The word content sparring, it just evokes this understanding of going back and forth. I am not doing it for you. I'm doing it with you. So yeah, that's how it came about.
That's quite the, like, because we talked at the start of this episode, like people not like thinking editing is just subtractive. And now even just that sparring, putting that lens on it is like, it's a back and forth and doing it live and out loud. I think that's really fascinating as well, because it, yeah, I don't know. That's really neat. That's, I can understand the energy that might come from that. And it sounds like you are getting energy from that live session.
Yeah. I didn't realize how important a name was until I came up with the right one.
Yeah. There's a lot of lessons in that as well. All right. Our favorite question to kind of always end conversations with is, what is one unpopular opinion you have as it pertains to B2B content or B2B marketing?
I help a lot of people with their LinkedIn content, but it's not the only thing I help people with. And my unpopular opinion is that you don't need to be on LinkedIn if you don't want to be on LinkedIn.
A bit of irony coming, I think this makes it that much more powerful. Irony coming from you, right?
That's why I gave that context there, because yes, that is a part of my content sparring offer, is to spar on your LinkedIn content. But I never want to ever be in a position where I have to force someone to want to be on LinkedIn. And I think that the people who are out there saying, you know, LinkedIn changed my life, you need to be on LinkedIn, LinkedIn is the best strategy nowadays, blah, blah, blah. Like, yes, there's truth to that, but it doesn't leave room for the nuance, which is that if you have a thriving business and you're getting leads and your revenue stream is fantastic, like, if LinkedIn is making you want to die, you don't have to do it. It's okay. And it does, like, it takes a very emotional toll on people. I work with people who really want to be there. Like, I want to be there. I love it. I'm never leaving. But it is exhausting mentally. It takes up a lot of brain space to consistently think of content. And if that's something that you feel like you don't need, or maybe not now, it's okay. I don't think that you should force it. And then you really shouldn't, you know, invest in something as well if the person that you're paying is going to be someone that you kind of argue with all the time because you don't actually want to be there. For me, the only way that I show up every day is, like I said at the beginning, I've made it fun. It's a creative outlet and I thoroughly enjoy it. And I think it shows as well when you don't. So just keep your mental health in mind. It is a place that takes a lot of mental energy. If your business is doing well, you don't need it.
I love that. That's really good advice. I felt that a little bit, like, you know, I feel like I can spend a lot of mental energy and brain power kind of like thinking like, oh, I'm going to craft this post. It's perfect. It's got data. It's got a good hook. And then it goes nowhere. And then, you know, some other day I'll be like, I'll just kind of have that like glimmer of an idea or like rant or topic that I want to like hit on. And it's like, that goes wild. Right. And so I've kind of found myself trying to be more okay with like, hey, you don't have to post every day if you don't have something to say. Don't like just shout into the abyss about something that I don't like care about that much, you know, like don't just post a post for LinkedIn's sake. It's really good. Cool. Erica, if people want to learn more from you, spar with you, take one of your courses, what's the best way to learn more about Cut the Fluff, learn more from you, or get in touch with you?
Yeah. So if you're interested in content sparring, you can go to contentsparring.com. If you want to join my newsletter or just follow me on LinkedIn, then find me on LinkedIn. The link to my newsletter is at the top, in the very prime real estate. So feel free to subscribe. You can follow me on Twitter at you want, I guess. Like, I don't, that platform is kind of weird. That's a whole other podcast, just venting about that platform at the moment, but I am there as well. So yeah.
I would encourage everybody to go check out Erica. It truly like makes some of my favorite content on the internet. So I think that speaks to you're having fun and it shows in your content. So would encourage all of our listeners to go do that. Erica, thank you so much for joining us today. Listeners, thank you for listening, watching along. Until next time, we'll see you same time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.